When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Hi everyone, this is Patrick and you're listening to the Phileas Club episode number 3 for June 25th, 2008. Like kids at the pool. Well, hello and welcome everyone to this new episode of the Phileas Club. I'm with Jim and Mohammed today, and I'm going to launch into the introduction straight away because we're going to try to not make it as long as it usually is. I usually record like 2 hours and then have to compress it, so you lose a lot of the valuable information that my guests have given to you. Today, that's not going to be the case. We're going to go straight ahead and say hello to Jim. How are you, Jim, today?
I am very well, thank you. Thank you, Patrick.
Jim, you are the host of the Clip Show, right? Very famous video podcast, world-renowned.
Award-winning. I host a video podcast called The Clip Show, and we review other podcasts. I know it's a genius idea, and we give them ratings and talk to them what you should be watching. So, if you're just getting into online video or you've been watching for a while and you're looking for new stuff, it's the place to come. We're in our 91st episode, so there's plenty of backlog, and there's lots of, we've seen a lot of great shows over the last couple of years. So I think it's a valuable resource.
You know what? I'll ask you a couple of questions about that at the end of the show. So you have a few minutes to prepare, you know, pretend to listen to what we're saying.
Good.
And our other panelist today is Mohammed. How are you, Mohammed?
Hello, I'm good.
So obviously, as you heard from his lovely accent, Jim is from the U.S., right? You're from Colorado, is it?
I am from the United States, yes.
Right. And Mohammed, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
My name is Mohammed, obviously. I'm from Qatar and met Patrick a week ago and asked him if I could join in. Here I am, a week later.
Right. So Mohammed is from Qatar. And if people don't know what Qatar is, it's a country in the Middle East. And I think I'm not mistaken when I say you have the highest income per capita in the world,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So you guys are basically the richest people in the world.
Yep.
So my next question is, how do I get to live in Qatar?
Live?
and enjoy all your riches.
Well, you can always go to Qatar, you know, but as in live, there's going to be very pricey houses, you know.
Yeah.
So
can't I just say I know Mohammed? He's a pretty cool kid.
Yeah, that's what most people do, you know.
Right. Yeah. So I'm saying a pretty cool kid because the other thing I want to tell about about Mohammed is that he's 16 years old. I'm not mistaken, right? 16.
Yeah. Watch my reputation go down.
No, hey, listen, that's fine. I just wanted to say that I was a little bit uncertain about the fact that I would have you on because, you know, 16 years old, it's a little bit different from what we usually have. And, you know, I thought about it. And this show is about getting the opinions from other people, you know, different people. And I think that it doesn't necessarily have to be a country or world region thing. The age thing can be also very interesting. So I hope you will be interesting enough to prove me right.
I'll try to be interesting.
And also, I would like to say, some people might have read that on the website, but I have a huge amount of faith in our younger generations. I think it's very common to say, you know, they're kids playing Xbox and not caring about anything in the world. I think people who actually take the time to speak to 15 and 16-year-olds would be very surprised at how mature and intelligent they are in general. I mean, when I was a kid, I was a freaking idiot. I don't know if it's the same for you, Jim, but
I think this is the case, period. Like, I think it's always the older generation saying the next generation is either stupid or doesn't have it together, or, oh, God forbid, we're going to leave it to these kids, you know. But I think if we look throughout time, I think it's always been that way. And I think that, you know, kids get a bad rap, or, you know, and I would agree. I always think of myself at, you know, at 16 as just a blundering moron. But, I mean, I was smart enough to make it this far. So, yeah, I mean, I think that the next generation of kids will be fine, and the next generation, you know, and, yeah, until something poisons the water and really makes us dumb, you know, I think we don't have anything to worry about.
Well, you know, the thing is, I honestly think that things like television and the explosion of media made us a little bit more aware, at least. I don't want to say smarter, but a little bit more aware and mature than our parents were at our ages when we were 16. And today with the internet, it's not all porn and, you know, videos of kittens. Right.
It's only,
and
85% porn.
Yeah, right. in the 15% that's left, you get a lot of valuable information when it's not MySpace. So,
Frenchman.
Like what, sorry?
Like Frenchman.
Yeah, for example. Yeah, that's my site for the people who don't know. So yeah, Mohammed, you're going to be representing the whole age group that you're in. So no pressure again.
No pressure.
Okay, so let's just get into the first part of the show, which is, of course, the international news. And for the international news, we have our first topic, which is, again, I think we've talked about this a few times, but again, oil prices and gas prices. There was a couple of meetings from the Energy G8, basically the oil production countries, who were deciding if they were going to raise the production of oil, the amount of oil that they were producing each month. And they decided a few hours ago only that they were not going to. We got a lot of reports on all that, of course, coupled with a few very interesting figures. Do you guys remember when the oil was $20 a barrel?
I would have been 10. No, gosh, it wasn't that long ago. You know what, 4 or 5 years ago? 6, 7 years ago? Wait a minute, it's been a while.
Yeah, you know, if you keep going, you're eventually going to get one number, right? So
20 years ago? I mean, when was the last time it was that low? No, like, it was trading $70, I think, right around 2001, right?
Well, it's gone up listen. 200. Okay, that's exactly the reaction I was hoping for. You were actually closer at first. Do you remember, Mohammed? You were actually pretty young, but still, do you remember things like that?
Well, you know, when I was driving a car when I was 7, you know, I was really happy with the price.
Yeah. Well, okay, it was 2002. In 2002, it was $20 a barrel. Wow. January 2008, that's not even 6 months ago, it was $100, and it's now $140. So what this brings me to is, how the hell did we not see that coming? You know, we have organizations, bodies of government, associations doing the studies and the work. And did we not see it coming, or did we just, you know, not care? And now we're, you know, screwed.
It's my space.
I think it's, It's Facebook. I think it's another one of these things where, you know, I'm sure there was a number of people that were like red flags were going up, right? And now it's to the point where it's like the blame game. It's a room full of, you know, people standing there talking about it, and everyone's pointing the finger at everyone else as to what the problem is, right? You know, you've got OPEC and the Saudis, and they're saying, you know, it's a bunch of guys in London and New York trading the oil up so high and speculating, and that's what's killing the oil price, the oil price. And then you've got here in the U.S., you've got manufacturers saying, listen, we don't have enough capacity to make gasoline, and that's why it's so expensive. You know, that's what's pushing the oil price up. And then you've got the other side, of course, which is the Chinese saying, you know, or we're saying about the Chinese that, you know, their increased demand is really beginning to cripple it, and it's a supply and demand issue, right? There's not enough of it to go around. So, and which one of those is right? Or is it all of them? Or is it the six others I didn't just mention?
Yeah, I guess they're all reasonable. I'm pretty sure it's a bit of everything.
And see, that bothers me. Like, they're all reasonable. Like, that's wait a minute. You know, like when I'm worried about that. Like, we're all so easy to say. I agree with you. Like, what went wrong? Why didn't we know this had come? It seems like we're kind of like lackadaisical about it now, especially here. It's becoming more and more prevalent in the news. But like, we've been sitting, you know, here in America, gas is still relatively cheap in comparison to the rest of, you know, at least Europe. But I mean, we just sat here and watched it go, you know, up a dollar, up another dollar, up another dollar. And everyone's like, oh, whatever. And now it's like, you know, pushing $5 in some places. And people are like, hey, wait a minute. It's kind of expensive.
So what about you, Mohammed? In Qatar, obviously you have a lot of oil, and you have a lot of natural gas. I think that's the main thing you have.
We have more gas than oil.
Right.
But
I guess energy-wise, so you have a lot of it. So are you guys like, you know, rubbing your hands and going like, ha, 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 we're even more rich? Or are you worried, or what's happening there?
Well, over in Qatar, the price of gas is like pretty cheap. Like compared to over here, I was surprised at the prices. I was like,
yeah, because you're in Washington at the moment, right?
Yeah. And like over in Qatar, it's there's a reason why we have the, you know, highest pay per capita, you know, because of all the gas and oil. And what I'm really worried about right now is there's going to be more demand for it, and it's just going down a hill. And eventually, what's going to happen if there's no oil?
Right. Yeah. So you feel you're concerned in your country about, you know, someday it's gonna. Basically, the reason why the OPEC didn't increase the production is that they're saying, listen, we don't have an infinite supply and the demand is high now, so increasing the production is just going to be a temporary fix, which I guess is understandable too. But you get that worry in Qatar also?
Yeah, because like all we have now is gas and oil. If you run out of that, we'll just be like a country over there with no resources, like, you know, natural resources that they can use.
Is Qatar? Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Took an hour.
Is Qatar one of those really desert-like country where, you know, like Dubai, that basically got completely built up from desert from the ground up in 30 years, or?
Yeah, that's what happened. We're just tribal families until we sort of got organized. We're just small country. Then we found oil, and we're like Dubai number two.
Yeah, okay. Another thing that happened because of the price of oil is something I was talking about last month, which is strikes. Well, you know, I'm always talking about strikes when it comes to France. But strikes in the truckers' industry, because obviously the gas price have gotten so high that they're barely making a profit, and so they are blocking the highways. And well, not so much now, but a few weeks ago they were completely blocking the highways, especially between France and Spain. For example, 600 to 800 trucks were blocked for 2 days. The guys couldn't move, couldn't go you know, away. They were blocked on the highways.
I saw those pictures.
You did? So How do you guys see that from... I have to say it's also happening in Spain, not just in France. But how do you guys see that from abroad? Do you think it's completely crazy, or do you understand it, or...
I think it's perfectly understandable, and I think you get the same complaints from truckers here in the United States who, I mean, everything, just like Europe, everything moves by truck here, and everyone doesn't worry about this diesel price fuel, right? But like everything you eat, everything you consume, everything you have is all dependent upon that truck, right? I mean, the clothes I'm wearing don't come from this country. They come from Southeast Asia, and they've got to come to me by truck, right? So, diesel prices here in the United States went from 80 cents probably 3 years ago to they're pushing $4.55 a gallon. So,
jeez, wow.
I mean, it's ridiculous the amount of money. And so you look at those truckers striking there, and you got to realize that if it continues to increase, truckers aren't unionized or put together for the most part in this country, but they're all together out there on the road, and it wouldn't take much for them to get organized and stop movement of goods, and that would cripple the economy.
How would the country react, though, if they started blocking the highways?
You'd have to block it in the east, right? Because if you block the highway in the west, people would just drive around you because it's, there's so much room. I guess if you blocked it in a major city like Los Angeles or Denver or Phoenix or something like that. But I think that they would react just like, they would react poorly. They would be against them at first because no one likes to be stuck in traffic. No one thinks about the long-term effects of them, right?
Yeah, I guess. What about you, Mohammed? Strikes happen often in Qatar? I just need to say this. We were talking when we were preparing the show a few days ago, and you were describing Qatar as this paradise where everything was nice and everyone was happy. And well, when you're the richest country in the world, I can understand it. But do you even have strikes, or do people just parade in the streets with flowers in their hair?
Right. Palm trees flowing,
drinks. Well, honestly, I haven't seen that many strikes. And even if they did come out, they just have to get permission to strike.
Oh, wow. From whom?
I think from the government.
Oh,
'cause, like,
okay.
You know, a lot of people aren't happy when the streets are closed. So,
Yeah, well, it's people aren't very happy here either, but, they do it anyway. That's the point, I guess. people unhappy enough and you'll be heard.
There's no reason to be, angry at the gas prices over in Qatar. 'Cause, like, over there, it's always cheap.
So what do you think of, do you even get the news of people, of truckers on strike, blocking the highways and everything?
I didn't even know about this when I came to D.C. Because, over here, I'm not used to the, low news.
Wait a second. You mean you didn't even know about the high gas prices, or?
No. I meant, the trucker strike.
Okay.
I knew about the high gas prices.
Okay. Okay, well, I guess that's not going to be resolved anytime soon. And the projections are some projections, we have to be careful here, are putting the barrel of oil at $300 by 2015. So I don't think that's going to change anytime soon.
One last thing on that gas prices. I just watched a news on the news. There were down in Texas, and people are driving across the border into Mexico and buying gas where it's it's like a dollar a gallon or less.
Wow.
And then driving back across the border and saving $40 or $50 per fill up.
Well, that's the thing that's a little bit scary. I don't have a car because there's no point having a car in Paris. It's such a crowded city, but I don't really see any way out of this. I mean, the only way would be to find another source of energy. Even oil, obviously the demand is increasing, and the supply is not going to get any bigger, except that the ice caps melt and we find oil in the North Pole, but that's going to be another issue.
What I find very interesting... Go ahead, sorry, go ahead.
The problem is... of all the people that would lose their job at the oil factory when we go to another energy source.
Well, yeah, things that have to happen have to happen.
Right. This is going to change. And I think that you know, if you look at the last gas crisis in the 70s, it pushed innovation in setting higher standards for gasoline in cars. It also set, you know, the motion of hybrid cars, electric cars. All of those came out of that last crunch. And if you look in 1985, the OPEC they raised production and lower the price of oil so that it would stymie this move towards a different energy source, right?
Right.
And so if anything's to happen now out of this, if we can take anything out of, you know, $400 or $500 a barrel oil, is that this huge demand will push and move us finally, hopefully, into a different energy source, into something that maybe runs cleaner and is more abundant on the planet, like, I don't know, salt water.
Yeah, absolutely. I think in 50, 80 years from now, we're going to look back at this and think, you know, it was going to happen anyway, and good things came out of it in the end. So,
right.
Okay, let's move on to another topic. The lovely people of Ireland voted on the amended constitution. I don't know if that's the official name, but a simplified constitution for Europe. And they voted no. Do you guys know what this is about?
I do. Not a clue.
Okay.
Just not that much.
Jim, do you want to take this one or?
No, go ahead. I mean, this is your bag. This is the EU, okay. Right?
Right. Okay. So what happened a couple of years ago is that France and Dutchland, Holland, I mean, voted on the European Constitution, which was made to expand the federal status, I guess, of the EU. And France and Holland voted no, which was an earthquake in Europe because it brought the whole union to a halt, basically. And then Sarkozy was elected president in France, and he drafted a simplified version of the constitution, which basically got rid of some elements, but allowed the union to work on an administrative standpoint. And that new constitution was to be submitted to a few countries, including France, who didn't vote by referendum this time, but by senatorial vote, basically. And Ireland also. And the Irish voted no to that simplified constitution. So, again, Europe is brought to a grinding halt. There is a lot of resentment in the EU because, you know, Ireland, before they entered the EU, was a pre-industrial country, and they got a huge, huge, huge amount of money from the EU. And now, because of a lot of false information and fear and economic recession in Ireland, they thought that, you know, they had to protect themselves from external, from decisions being made outside of their own power, you know, sphere of influence. So they voted no, and it's making things very difficult for the French government, because they are going to be taking the presidents of the EU in a few days, and they start with, you know, a bad situation to begin with. So that's basically the whole story.
You know what I think is funny about, like, the resentment towards Ireland is, you know, I think I'm kind of like, I can't decide which to come down on.
Just a second. Are you of Irish descent or?
I am not. I am not.
Damn, I would have had so much fun if you were. Anyway.
I think, one, you know, to be upset with them because they received a lot of money, and you're right. Their joining the EU helped Ireland more than probably, you know, any other country. I mean, it really rebounded their economy and everything like that. But to say to them that they don't have a vote and that their vote doesn't matter or count, you know, it's a little rough. Like, they can have their opinion, and if they want to bow out, I mean, they're being called the lonely no right now, right? I mean, even Britain got on board. So I think that there just needs to be resolution. And I think that you know, they should. I'm sure they're working behind the scenes diligently to get Ireland on board. And I mean, I read the little accord. I mean, it looks like it. I mean, it makes sense, right? I mean, if the EU, you know, this is what the EU has been trying to do for 100 years since the founding of this idea, and that is get it together and become a major bloc, right? Become a major player. And without this without this power to bring things under control, it's, you know, you're going to continue to flounder against other, you know, economic sources, especially, you know, powerhouses like China.
Yeah, absolutely. And I have to say, you know, it's not that strongly worded in the opinion isn't that strong. It's bitter rather than, you know, really aggressive towards Ireland. It's like, you know, we, of course you have your say. Of course you can do whatever you want, and you're a part of
the EU. But fall into line.
But no, not fall into line. But you know, you look around and you're like, and I'm not saying that's what I think, but the general impression is like, come on, seriously? Like, after all we did for you, you're stabbing us in the back? That's a little stiff, you know? Anyway.
That's Irish.
I think it's, you know what, I think if anything, I look at this whole EU thing and I think this, it's absolutely amazing that all of these countries, you know, I mean, not just like, you know, here in the United States, it's a bunch of different states, but for the most part, we've been together since the beginning. I mean, these are countries that have been established for hundreds of years, and they can get together and you know, and do what you guys have done. I mean, it's amazing. And there's, of course, there's going to be little bumps in the road. And I think this is just a tiny little bump.
Yeah, I think the overall story here is that it takes time, and it's not going to be, you know, finished in a couple of days anyway, or a couple of years, or even a couple of decades. But in the end, yeah, these things take time, and it's going to take a lot more time. But in the end, it's going to be a good thing. Mohammed, what do you think about all this? Do you even care about EU? Or?
Well, I just feel like, I don't know, I'm looking at the situation like everybody in the EU are like kids at the playground, and they all want to go to the pool, and Ireland is like, no, I don't really want to, and they all get mad at him. That's what I feel the situation's like.
That's a good. Pretty good analogy. All right. Do you in Qatar get news about what happens in the EU in general, or do you get more news about what happens in the, you know, the Middle East? Or, well, obviously you would, but.
Well, Al Jazeera, it's like the main like news channel that I watch over there. It's like on 24/7 in my house. Mm-hmm. So if I was in Qatar, I would have known about this quite a long time ago. But they usually talk about anything major. They just talk about it in Al Jazeera.
So. Yeah, I'm sure Al Jazeera covered this pretty extensively.
Yeah, we were talking about Al Jazeera with Turkey in the previous episode. And everyone says that basically they are the CNN of the Middle East. But yeah, Turkey had a few things to say about that. But yeah, anyway. Okay, let's go to the next topic, which is, as we do every month, the U.S. election, with something major happening with Hillary Clinton. Maybe you want to take this one, Jim. This is
wait a minute! Something major happened with Hillary Clinton.
Well,
yeah, she got booted out by the press. I'll tell you what, it was unfair.
Really?
It was unright, and I'm still mad about it.
Wait! Were you supporting Hillary?
I was a Hillary supporter. I know that might be surprising, but
no, hey, it takes all kinds.
I'm a Democrat. Tried and true, I guess. And
geez, you know, everyone we get here is a Democrat. We seriously have to get Republicans on the show. Anyway,
I was a Republican once, and I think that I'm a moderate Democrat on some things. I, you know, some people might disagree with that. I sometimes come off a little too liberal, but no, I mean, I think that if you look at the, yeah, you're right. Hillary Clinton got out at the beginning of June. Finally, you know, a lot of people would say that, you know, back in March when she pretty much lost Super Tuesday, you know, she should have gotten out then. And I was of the thought in March, you know, when it came, you know, in the United States, for those of you that don't know, I'm sure you do. I mean, the Super Tuesday is the day in which there was 20 primaries, and that pretty much tells you who, you know, the Republicans and the Democrats are going to pick, right? It always usually falls out in March, and then we take a couple of months break, and they get back at it for a general election.
Yeah.
And this year they got the Republican, John McCain, and then we fought it out for another 3 or 4 months with two candidates who were very, very strong, Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. And I just think that, you know, it can't, after March for me, I was like, I don't care who it is, you know, I'll vote for either of them. I just want them to stop. Like, they spent millions of dollars and they kind of they tore the party apart a little bit. And I was kind of worried that it was going to go all the way to the convention in August, but she got out. And I think that was kind of a broker deal. And we'll see what comes out of that. They're going to be together today. They're going to be together on Friday, campaigning together for the very first time. And, you know, there's a whole subsection of people now that are saying they'll vote for McCain just to spite, because you know,
yeah,
just
how,
because.
Although, you know, when I hear Hillary Clinton's policies, she's so, maybe that's because I'm French and we're a bunch of socialists, but she's so far right, you know, she's so far out to the right that it makes me wonder how Democrat she really is. That's my impression anyway.
So here's the problem, right? In America, if you want to become president, you've got to come to the middle, right? So start far left in the very beginning, and as you get closer and closer to becoming president, as the election goes on, you have to move to the middle. You've got to move to the middle or you won't get the independents in the country. You won't get their vote. And without their vote, you can't be president. So
you think Obama is going to start drifting right now?
Absolutely. I think if anything, you can already see some of that like movement to the right. If he doesn't, they're just going to rip him up, right? You can only buy into this change thing for so long, right? You know, and if you listen to conservative radio or television here or read it in the United States, you'll see the Republicans already beating him up as like a young nobody who doesn't know anything. Yeah. And it's only going to take – you know, they call it the October surprise here in the United States, and that's usually in October something comes out that changes the election results for November. And so, I guess to get back to the Hillary thing, I think that – you know, they started to beat her up. The press started to beat her up because they started to like Obama more. And I think she got a pretty negative shake in the press towards the end. And I know that a lot of people will disagree with me saying, you know, she's a Clinton and she brought it upon herself. But I think what it really comes down to is, and I've said this time and time again, is that I'm not sure this country would more like a black man than a woman to be president, because I don't think we can handle a woman in this country yet, which is, I think, a sad state of affairs. And I don't think it's being said enough in this country either that like that we have a problem with a woman leading us, you know. And if you look at a lot of like the pro Clinton press, there's a lot of women saying, you know, here it is again, you know, women are getting the bad shit.
Yeah. Oop, someone dropped off.
I'm still with you.
Yeah, so Jim decided, you know, I think that's the Clinton, not the Clinton,
it's
the
Obama
McCain, curse. The McCain and Obama campaign, making him drop off. Yeah. I'm adding him
here
again.
Here he is again.
Yeah.
It thought I was talking too much, so it cut me off.
Yeah. No, we were explaining to the audience that it was actually the Obama campaign, you know, dropping you off.
Exactly. You know, I don't want to sound too negative, but, I'll vote for Obama as long as he stays true. Don't cut me off again. As long as he stays true to his as long as he stays true. I'm a little worried. We'll see what happens.
Okay. You know, I have a friend who was telling me that Americans would rather vote for a black man than a woman. That was maybe 2 years ago. Rowan was telling me that, if you're listening, Rowan, good call, man. And I couldn't believe him. And you know, he got proven right, I guess. But, yeah. Well, I don't know if it's the fact that she was a woman, but definitely you can feel that. Playing a part of in the whole thing. But what I'm really curious about, though, is how can people who are claiming to be Democrats go with McCain just out of spite? That's something. Can you shed some light on that, or do they hate Obama?
Revenge is a best served warm. No, I don't know. You know, it's easy to, you know, McCain has always been a friend of the independents. And, you know, if you remember back in 2004, there was a lot of talk of bringing McCain on as Kerry's running mate. Mm-hmm. He's not the most, you know, Republicans and especially hardline conservatives do not like McCain. They think that he's played ball with the Democrats way too much. And, you know, he's been a senator for some 20 years and, you know, you've got to make deals in the Senate. And, you know, that's part of the great thing about our country and about our government is that it's built on, you know, bridging the gap and bringing the two parties together and making good legislation that way. And I think that as Americans, especially during this time, we forget that that's what it's all about. Right. You know, one of the great things. And so the spite thing, I think it's just like, you know what, if we don't get what we want, we'll vote for the other guy and that'll show you, which is just it's not a very bright way to do it, I guess. You know,
yeah, we were Mohammed was talking about kids not, you know, wanting to go play at the pool.
Exactly, same
before.
Thing.
I don't know. I think McCain has displayed a lot more Republicanism in the past few months, but maybe that's me.
No, you're absolutely right. He's had to. He's really playing to his right, because if he can't get the religious right, especially to show up to vote, he could be in trouble.
Right. Mohammed, anything you want to add about that the U.S. election?
The only thing I'm just not sure why they're doing it is they're not voting for Obama because of his middle name, I heard.
Yeah, the Republicans are playing that up because he has, you know, there's been a bunch of emails floating around that he's a Muslim and that, you know, because his name's Hussein, like, you can't trust him, which, you know, is absolutely ridiculous because, one, he's an American citizen, he was born an American, two, he's a U.S. senator. I mean, come on.
And also, they're also not voting for him because he wants to go around and talk with the foreign leaders that are supposedly the enemies of America.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think as a president, you should do that because it sort of heals the wounds that can easily be healed between both nations.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, this is just another like right wing or spin control. You know, they took one thing that he said and they spun it back the other way, or they cut off half of what he said and they just used it as a good it's a good little scare tactic for the other side, right? Saying, you know what he really said about is that he would sit down, but on his terms. You know, he's not, you know, it's fun. They're just trying to make him look weak, right? And not strong. And that plays big in this country. You've got to look like a strong leader. And it plays big in any country, right?
We're going to have a little bit more to say about that in the local stories when I'm going to talk about Sarkozy and the Middle East. But just a couple of more things. Mohammed, do you feel like Qatar is rooting for a Republican or Obama or McCain? Or do they have a favorite or do they not care? Because I'm guessing that, you know, when you have oil, you're going to go with the Republicans, but...
I'm not really sure what Qatar wants, but at least a president that would buy a product.
Okay, well, I guess, you know, that would be McCain, I think, but I don't know. Another thing on the U.S. election is the book from McLellan. Did you hear about that, Jim?
You know, I didn't. I didn't even know. Maybe I did, and I just don't know what it is. What is it?
You know, McLellan was the press secretary for a couple of
years. Oh, McLellan. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, sorry. My bad.
No, that's all right. That's all right.
So, yeah, he basically got a book out saying, you know, I was the press secretary for a couple of years, and... you know, what we did was very dishonest, and we twisted the truth, and we lied. And
right.
How does that play in the election? And is it, you know, like, yeah, right, like that, tell me something new, or is it a big impact? Or
it was a big impact in terms of, you know, Scott McLellan was, he was a Bushman and he was tried and true to the party. And for him to come out and say this against the administration was a hit, was a big hit. And, you know,
is McCain going to suffer because of it?
No, not at all. I think if anything, it ran its press cycle, and I've seen him a couple more times in the last couple of weeks, but he sold some books because of it. And I think it kind of shows you, it just kind of shows you, like, once again, like, the, you know, the Bush administration was just unbelievable the amount that they could pull off, you know. And I think if anything, if you look at Scott McLellan, he was just pissed because he was lied to, and he went out there and he put his face on the line, and now he kind of looks like an idiot. And I think he wrote this book sort of like a, you make me look like an idiot, I'll make you look like an idiot, right?
So spite again.
But spite again. I think it's spite, and I think, you know, there was some money to be made there.
Yeah, of course. Do you think he didn't know? He seriously was sincere when he was coming out and saying what he was saying?
Well, part of it has to do with this whole Valerie Plame thing, which is the CIA operative that the administration, you know, put out there. And I think that, you know, he was being told by top administrators saying, you know, this is true, this is true. And these are people that he trusted, so maybe not. I mean, if people that I trusted and worked for, and he was a believer, he's a true neocon, a believer. So, like, I probably wouldn't second guess these guys. You know, the president comes to me and says something that's true, I'm most likely going to believe him.
Yeah, makes sense. Okay. What's, again, I'm turning back to Mohammed. What's your view on the Bush administration in that regard? You know, the lead up to the war and Iraq and everything like that. And then we're going to move on.
Well, as a country, Qatar was, you know, it's just, it dealt with America, okay, you know, as a country. But, like, all of the locals that I know, there's a strong resentment to him. And Well, they keep on blaming him for Iraq and stuff, all the locals. Okay. And I'm the only one that's like not choosing side, because like I'm just thinking like, okay, he did what he did, but you can't just hate a guy for it. But yeah, that's what the locals feel.
Okay, I would argue that you can hate people for what they do, but I don't know.
I just said I don't, you know.
Okay, yeah, sure, of course. Okay, we have a couple more stories, including Zimbabwe and very important things, but we're running a little bit behind, so I'm going to go to something way more important, which is the Euro 2008 Soccer Championship. So, of course, the European Soccer Championship is a very big event sports-wise in Europe. I'm not a very big football fan, so I don't really care. But it's been dominating the news ever until, you know, France lost to Italy in a shameful match. I wanted to know if you guys heard about it and if you cared.
I'll go. In Qatar, like, soccer is very important. We always play it. We always look at the news on it. We love the sport. So Euro 2008 is a big thing in Qatar. Not a big thing for me. I don't really like soccer.
Ah, there you go, my man. Soccer is really boring. I think the only thing more boring than soccer is baseball. And I'm going to make a lot of enemies there.
I hate baseball.
Yeah, baseball, I don't understand how it continues to draw fans in. And if you look at a baseball game and you look at the stands, like if it's not like playoff time or whatever, there's no one there, right? There's these huge American stadiums and they're empty. You know, they see 10, 20, 30,000 people, there's nobody there. If baseball doesn't reinvent itself, I think it's toast.
You know, I have to be honest, though, watching it on the television is boring, but I went to a game when I was in San Francisco a couple of months ago, and that was a lot of fun. Going there was, you know, a day out. You can make a day out of it, and that's fun. But just watching it,
I think any sporting event is, you know, if you go with friends, especially baseball, it's warm. There's beer. There's food. I mean, you're gonna have a good time, right?
Yeah.
But the game's still boring. It's still moving at the slowest pace you've ever seen.
Yeah, I feel bad because Curt Schilling is a co-host on one of the shows I do, and well, Kurt, you know, I love you, man, but the thing, it's not my game anyway. So anyway, the Euro 2008,
right,
do you guys care? Or because I hear a lot that, you know, soccer is, you know, the girls' football thing that they do in high school.
Right. Well, no, soccer's big here. I mean, I played soccer for a number of years when I was a kid, and
a girl, right?
I am a girl, indeed. Well, if I was could be on the girls' soccer team, would have been all right. I think that, you know, I've been watching. I've seen a couple of matches on ESPN2. It's actually being done in HD, so it's kind of cool to watch. And you know, soccer is growing in the United States. You know, we've got our own league now, which has gotten a little bit big. We got Beckham a couple of years last year, so that helped press wise. But I still think it's got a long way. It's nowhere near as big as it is in the rest of the world. You know, football still dominates. American football still dominates, you know, here in the United States.
Oh, there you go. That's the most boring thing ever.
That is the worst
thing. I like American football.
Really?
It's not
really?
Bad. Yeah.
Oh, geez. Wow. That's a surprise.
I just think that, you know, if you want to, George Clooney did a movie this year about American football in the beginning, and it's like a perfect commentary on what went wrong with American football. It's great.
Okay. I'll try to catch that. By the way, we also have something like American football here. It's called rugby, and we don't use any of that wimpy, you know, body armor and things like that. We just ram into one another, just, you know, full on.
Yeah, rugby's fun. I mean, that's what American football, you know, that rugby, that we stole it, so.
Yeah.
And then wussied it out.
if you want to hear something funny, most of the Qatari national team is not Qatari.
Really?
Really?
The national team?
The national team. They have Qatari passports, but they're not Qatari.
So they buy the guys for the football team? Where do they get them from?
Like, we have this guy called Sebastian. He's from Uruguay, and he's on the national team. actually scored a couple of goals for the World Cup luminaries.
Wow.
Oh, that's good.
Oh, hey, there you go. That's how I can get into into Qatar. I just need to play football like an international athlete.
There you
go.
Yeah,
just get...
get you on that. We're going to get you on that that fitness routine right away.
Yeah. Hey, you know, I've been running like half an hour twice a week, and it's been killing me already, so I don't know if I'm ready for that. All right. Let's move on to our local stories and end this section. Okay, local stories. Should I start, or does anyone want to start?
Go ahead. Let's hear what's going on locally.
Okay. So, you know, that would go a lot smoother if we actually came prepared. But anyway. So there was a big story a couple of weeks ago about a marriage, a wedding that got annulled because the girl lied about being a virgin, and it went all the way to the courts. It was, of course, tied to a religious issue. The guy was a Muslim, and he wanted his wife to be a virgin. And it got really big because, you know, there was basically two things. It was the fact that she lied, which was, you know, she deceived his trust. And the fact that his argument was based on the fact that he was a Muslim, and it was a problem because, you know, it's very difficult for women to establish themselves already in that environment. So the court actually saying that the claim had grounds was making it even bigger in that respect. But, you know, it was really a two-pronged argument. The lying and the religious issues were very different, and the court ruled on the lying part, and the story became big because of the religious part. So that was a really big story.
So they gave the annulment because she lied to her husband?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I guess
that's marriage, though. You lie.
Well, this is coming from the 16-year-old.
I told you 16-year-olds were a lot smarter than we were at their age. Yeah. What's the status of things like that in Qatar? Because last month we had when we had Turkey on, he was talking about things in Saudi Arabia. And, you know, women were not in the greatest situation ever, even though it was improving. What's the status of women in Qatar?
They actually have a lot of rights. Like, women can drive there, they can vote. We actually have them in the government too. And wow. They're just sort of heads of like some parts of businesses.
Hmm. Okay. So there's no discrimination, there's no Islamic rule, hard Islamic rule in Qatar?
Well, Islamic rule in Qatar is not as hard as Saudi Arabia. That's all I'm saying.
Okay. Yeah, you were telling us before that you can even get alcohol, that it's not completely forbidden, basically.
But it is forbidden, but if you want it, you can get it.
Okay, it's like pot for in the U.S. or France,
yeah, in U.S., you know.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
What about pot? What about, you know, drugs? Can you get them in Qatar?
There's a drug problem here, actually, because we keep on getting like drugs from like Pakistan and Iran. They're going through this ocean and going into Qatar and, like, you know, selling drugs from there.
Okay.
And we actually have a thing called CID, which is making some major drug busts here in Qatar. Well, not here in Qatar.
CID, that sounds like a TV show. Yeah.
That's great. That'd be
for people who don't know, maybe we should have said that before, but Qatar is actually on the side of Saudi Arabia. It's a tiny part of what could have been Saudi Arabia. It's a peninsula, I guess.
They actually took some of our lands a long time ago. That's all I remember. What's his name? Qatar was actually bigger, but then Saudi Arabia took a lot of the land.
Bastards. Okay. Anything to say about that wedding thing, Jim, from the U.S. perspective?
That's just interesting. I mean, I guess, like, you know, if you lie, I mean, I guess that's grounds for – I always have a hard time with that whole annulment thing, right? Like, you know, I guess, you know, it just comes down to, you know, you got to know who you're going to marry, right? And then to get the court involved in it and, you know, I just think that, like, the state's involvement in marriage just baffles my mind. You know, why we've allowed this to come and happen throughout the world is bothersome. Like, in my mind, I guess marriage is between the man and the woman, or the man and the man, or the woman and the woman, depending on where you're from. And, you know, how they work it out is, like, you know, why do we have to spend, especially in this country, I can't even imagine how much money is spent, you know, negotiating out of one of these bad marriages because someone lied to someone or stole something or did something wrong. So it's just, to me, it's all frivolous. Like, this, you should work it out with you. It's your problem, not the state's, right?
You know what? You were asking why before. I think we're old guys here and we can agree to blame the women for it. So we can say women are crazy.
Yeah, it's much easier. It's much easier. Right.
It's there the we go. Fault. It's the women's fault. There we go.
Oh my God. I'm going to get hate mail and bombed in the house.
We're kidding. We love women, all of them. And men. We love everyone. We're a panel of lovers. Talking about love.
I'd have to disagree on that.
Okay, next story from France is it's a little bit international too. Sarkozy was in Israel it was a few days ago, and he was pushing for his Mediterranean Alliance project, which is very dear to his heart. It's the idea that he wants the whole of the Mediterranean countries to band together in a union similar to the one we have in Europe. So it would take, you know, all the northern African countries and the Gulf countries and basically everyone, and give them a governmental federal body kind of type of thing. And he's been pushing it. And the interesting thing is that he wants Israel to be part of it also. So that would be a way to, you know, try to get people to talk. We were saying before that it's very important for people to talk. And I definitely agree. I mean, a lot of people criticize the UN, and I do that too, because we say, you know, they never do anything. But you have to imagine what it was before we had the UN. Countries didn't have a forum to talk and to you know, to just communicate. So anyway, that's a big thing. And he was making a speech at the Knesset in Israel. So that was a big story in France. Did you hear about that? Oh, yeah, really?
Yeah. I mean, that's the first time a French president's talked to the Knesset in a while, 20 years or something like that. And I mean, for him to come there and, you know, he was like, you know, he's pitching the one capital state for Palestine and Israel, and yeah, I mean, it's big, you know. And so he was leaving this morning. There was a bomb. Did you see that? It went off. It killed somebody.
Oh, no, I didn't.
And they had to put him on the plane quickly. Yeah, I mean, it's a big event when any president goes, you know, there and tries to get, you know, the Middle East. It would be great if they could come together and talk and have something like the EU, or, you know, bound together like we have over here. I mean, I think that it's a good start of a dream, right? And how it would work or how it would come together is beyond my comprehension at this point.
Yeah. Well, you know, we've been in Europe, we've been at it for a while, and still we get those pesky Irish people.
Yeah, Irish people.
Kids at the pool.
Yeah. So, you know, they might have to work at it for a while longer also to all get in the same pool.
Right.
Yeah, that metaphor is going to get old pretty fast. Mohammed, what's your view? I get not your personal view, but the view of Qatar on Israel and Palestine and the conflict there.
Well, thanks for putting me in such a, you know, stressful position, speaking for Qatar, you know, about this. There's two views, actually. There's the view of the locals and there's the view of the government. Government, you know, every government has to be, like, on good relations with someone, because then we can trade better and stuff. And we're just sort of neutral with Israel. But the locals, you know, there's a lot of hate on Israel and the locals.
Yeah. Okay, so standard I'm going to get hate mail for this too, but standard Muslim country, you don't really like Israel. I think it's pretty safe to say that, you know, usually they're not friends.
Well, as a government, you know, we're okay with them, but locals, you know, they just don't like them.
Okay.
I read they're pretty neutral on Israel, and they get some flack for that.
Okay. Oh, okay. So it's not too bad. Goodwill. What about the news reports? Like when you get a news from, you know, Israel strikes back at some camp in south of Lebanon, and do you get the news from, you know, the Israeli ruthlessly killed 13 people in the camps, or do you get like it was a retaliation from a horrible attack from Hezbollah, or do you get one-sided things, or?
Al Jazeera actually does both sides. Well, it doesn't go like, oh my God, look at these Israelis, look what they're doing. They're just saying, this is what happened, here's what Israel did, and that's the story.
Okay. You listen to Al Jazeera in English or in Arabic?
In Arabic, and if there's someone else that wants to listen to it in English, I'll just listen to English. I just listen to both.
Oh, by the way, your English is excellent. How come?
It's not excellent. Still have that small accent, you know. But kindergarten was in America for me.
Okay.
So I just learned English there.
Cool. Okay. Okay, I'm done. Let's go to Mohammed. You seem to be on a roll.
Well, since we're talking about Palestine, Israel, there was a film over here at the cinema about Palestine and Israel.
See how I did that? I remembered that you were going to talk about that, and that was my transition. I absolutely remembered it. That's not true. Sorry.
It's a film about this 13-year-old named Sammy and his donkey, and it's just about him. It says about him like trying to go through Palestine and Israel occupied Palestine. He's just trying to make a living there, you know.
Oh, okay. So it's a documentary or is it fiction?
Yeah, it's a documentary.
What's the name of it?
Let me see. My Simple Story. It's in the theaters in Qatar.
It's a Qatari film or?
It's by a Canadian Palestinian, but he premiered it in Qatar.
Okay.
I'm not sure, but I think Qatar let this be premiered as it's sort of like, you know, they're trying to educate the people about what's happening there as the 60th anniversary of Israel.
Hmm.
I think this is what they're doing.
So the guy is Palestinian. Is there a concern that he's going to be one-sided, or is he fair, or?
Well, his views on the little kid, like what goes wrong to this little kid is what's happening to all the other little kids in the area.
Right.
So okay. You just sort of know.
Okay.
On a lighter note, you know.
Well, you know, it always gets heavy when we talk about that part of the world. We try to get, you know, light tones on everything, but yeah, it's not easy when we talk about that. Sorry, go ahead.
Danish archaeologists found a prehistoric settlement in Qatar, 700,000 years old.
Yeah, you sent me that link. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was remarkable because, sorry, you want to say it?
It's okay.
What I saw is that it was the first signs of organized civilization, basically. I mean, organized settlements, 700,000 years old. So, that would put Qatar in the first, the first spot for actual, you know, the first one we discovered that was that old for settlements. So,
well, what it did was it may confirm alternative theories on how early humans... By the way, I'm reading this off the site. I don't talk like this. It confirms alternative theories on how early humans emigrated from the African continent.
Right. That's fascinating. 700,000 years.
Yeah. So, Jim, what would your country think about that relating to, you know, the Earth being 5,000 years old?
Let's not. Can we not, please? I don't... I love these 5,000-year-old people. What are they thinking? You know, I mean, that's where did they come up with this number? Is what
well,
I want to
I think
know.
It's a big book and it's called the Bible. I think that's where they come up from.
I don't even think the Bible puts it at $5,000. It's just it's amazing. Like that's just, every time there was a movie that came out over Christmas. It was called 10,000 BC, and I just wonder what the Christians thought of that, or you know these right wingers. I mean, that has to be just a blatant lie to them. I imagine they didn't go see it.
Well, they probably, you know, they didn't waste their time seeing it. I did, and it was really bad. But yeah, I get
you. Those are the same guys that did Independence Day, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. 5,000 years old. I mean, I don't know. It just amazes me. I have nothing to say about that.
Okay.
But the interesting thing is the thought that, like, Homo sapiens weren't here, like, 700,000 years ago, so this might actually add some backing to the evolution debate.
Oh,
good.
Awesome.
Good.
And are Qataris taking pride in the fact that, you know, the settlement might be in Qatar, so, you know, it might have some influence, and, you know, they were the first.
First, right. That's good.
Well, we're kind of happy that the spotlight isn't about Qatar made another $20 trillion over oil.
Right.
So. Oh wow! So I guess my introduction was pretty crappy. My introduction of Qatar. Sorry about that.
Okay.
Anything else, Mohammed? Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, I'm just saying. Like, at least now we know that humans were there 700. Well, yeah, humans were there 700,000 years ago. Because I have a guess that dinosaurs don't make civilizations. I'm just guessing.
No. Yeah, you never know. Velociraptors might have, like, small, you know, mud
small
huts.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Jim, do you want to take over?
I have some really local stuff. In Colorado and throughout a lot of the United States, after Prohibition in the 20s in the United States, you couldn't drink in America. All liquor sales stopped. And after that, they lifted Prohibition in the late 20s, but a lot of states continued not allowing liquor to be sold on certain days of the week, mostly Sundays. Mm-hmm. And in some counties altogether, you can't buy liquor. And a lot of states just went to afternoon so that you could go to church and then come home and then you could drink. And in Colorado, you can't buy...
Just a second, Jim. You mean in some counties you can't buy liquor on Sunday, not all the time?
There's actually dry counties in some parts of the East where you can't buy liquor at all. And so you got to drive like 5 miles to the other county to buy the liquor. And of course, a lot of these are leftover laws from our Puritan beginnings, our Christian beginnings, and some of them are left on the books purely just because they don't want to change the law. Well, here in Colorado, and four or five other Western states have changed it too. They're going to allow liquor sales on Sunday starting next month. And that's the first change in, I'd say 60 years on this law. So this is pretty big for me in particular, because, you know, you do a lot of stuff on Sundays, you know, and you don't plan ahead, and you want a bottle of wine, and then you realize that you're going to be drinking, you know, tap water because you didn't plan ahead. So, yeah, so this it's you know, you don't think anything about it, and then, you know, it all comes into play. And so it's a pretty big thing for us here. And I know that there's a lot of people that aren't happy about it because the liquor stores was like the one day off, right, that they could take off. And now that they're going to have to start working. And I've been of the thought that if you don't want to work, don't work. You know, it's your call. You own the store.
Yeah, of course. There's a lot. It's not related to alcohol. I guess, you know, thinking that someone could not be selling alcohol because it's Sunday in France is basically blasphemy, of course. You know, we've got to have our wine. But working on Sunday is a big issue in France. So they a lot of people lobby to try and make us allowed to work on Sundays. But officially, the law says that you're not allowed to work on Sundays, except for, you know, restaurants and stuff like that. So, yeah, I could definitely understand what's happening there. But So what's going to happen? Are they going to allow it, or is it just talks now?
Yeah, so it's done. It's been in talks for – it's been on the – so it had to go to a ballot, and it got voted on in November. And it's been back and forth probably for the last 5 years, and they passed it. And so it goes into effect. You'll be able to buy liquor starting July 6th, which is the first Sunday in July. So Yeah, it's kind of cool. And what I was really hoping for is it's only – in Colorado is also different than a lot of states in the United States that you can only buy liquor in liquor stores and not in like grocery stores or pharmacies and stuff like that. So they had that in the original part of the law, but it got taken out because the liquor store owners were like, that'll kill our business. So you can't go to the store and buy like, you know, fruit, meat and beer. You have to go to another store, which is kind of. I grew up in Arizona, where you can go to the grocery store and buy everything, and so I've always been a little unhappy about Colorado's inability to buy beer and wine in a grocery store. So I was unhappy that I got stripped from the law. But yeah, so beer and wine on Sundays in Colorado. Come and visit us.
Basically, half the state is going to be drunk next Sunday, right?
I think you're absolutely – I will be drunk next Sunday.
Hey, you got to celebrate. Okay, another story, the last story.
If you live in the United States, it's about the floods. Everything – you know, I was talking to a friend on Friday night, and you know, if you watch any of the major news networks, CNN or MSNBC or Fox News, it's literally all-day coverage of how bad it's raining in the Midwest, the middle part of the country. And you can tell it's a slow news day when every 10 minutes they're from the same small town in Iowa talking about how another levee broke. And it's an important story, and I'm sorry to see that it's flooding, but this is one of those 100-year floods that happens every 100 years or 500 years. And to, you know, I was just watching this morning and they're all outraged that the levee broke. Well, you know, this is nature, you know, water will flow where it's going to flow, you know, and they're trying to blame the government and everyone's pissed off and, you know, levees break. And water flows, and you know, when you live on the Mississippi, which is the biggest river in the United States, and it overflows, this shouldn't come as a surprise to you. So, I mean, it's really bad. It's really widespread. It started, you know, in Iowa and Ohio, and it's, of course, once it starts flooding there, it's all downstream. So almost every state along the Mississippi is flooding, and we're talking billions of damages. And damage and whole towns underwater. If you've seen any of these pictures, it's just go online and check it out. It's unbelievable to see, you know, hundreds and hundreds of towns under hundreds and hundreds of gallons of water. And there's no end in sight. You know, it's raining again today. So, you know, I'm really sorry, but like, it's just the news coverage alone is just, it's just unbelievable how they just pound it into your head. And
you know, 100-year flood, it's understandable, but yeah, it's not like anything else is happening anywhere else, like, you know, in Iraq.
That's one of my big complaints with like CNN and MSNBC and stuff like that, and Fox, is that you know, there's hundreds of stories happening worldwide, and we take one story and beat it to death all day long. And I realize that probably not everybody watches the news like I do, but I would just like to know more. I mean, I know it's flooding.
By the way, Fox News didn't blame the government.
That's the one channel where they weren't complaining.
They didn't. They were like, gosh, the government did a great job.
All right. On that ironic note, we are going to scoot off to the last section of the show, and now for something completely different. So we're going to go through this really fast. My story is the fact that a town in the part of France that's called Champagne, which gave the name to the drink, Champagne, inherited from a person who was very much in love with the town. He was very old and very rich. So the town itself inherited 37 million euros, which at the current rate... of dollars would be something like, I don't know, 17,000 gajillions dollars. So the town actually inherited that huge amount of money. And the funny thing is, in the 90s, they already found 2.5 tons of gold buried somewhere in the in this town's area. So they're
happy.
Yeah, there you go. What am I thinking about Qatar? I should go to Rouez en Champagne. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It's a much shorter travel, and there's money flowing out of every place in this town.
So you see, in the U.S., you have like dogs inheriting millions of dollars. Here we have towns.
towns, right?
Yeah. do you guys have a funny, quirky light story?
I didn't get one.
Oh, shame on you, Jim Kirks.
Yeah, I know. Maybe next time.
Mohammed, do you have one?
It's not funny, but it used to be funny, but there's this company called Qtel in Qatar.
Okay.
It's just a monopoly on telephone and internet.
Yeah.
So, anyways, the funny thing is, it's not really funny, but it's sort of funny that people are paying anyways because they know there's nothing else, and they're just charging you for whatever they want.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you know, happens. Yeah. That's what happens when you have a monopoly. Do they not have plans to introduce other competitors to the telephone market?
Yeah, they tried, but for example, the telephone lines belong to this company, so.
And it's not state regulated. They didn't get the monopoly because, you know, they were establishing it at first and they had it for a few years. And
well, in the U.S., you know, you can't have a monopoly, right?
Yeah.
Well, in Qatar, okay. I guess in Qatar it's okay.
Oh,
and,
okay. I see.
Qatar's charging you for breathing, and, you know.
Well, you know, it's not that much different here. I just talked to a friend of mine who said that they had read an article about the telecommunication companies here charging random charges, $2, $4, $6 on bills as miscellaneous charges, in hopes that you won't notice. And they did some an independent group did some studies, and it said that 75% of the people don't notice the charge and continue to pay it, and they've been paying it for years.
Wow, jeez.
So okay. it's not just the monopolies. I mean, anybody who can sneak a charge in, right?
Yeah, I guess it's true. But okay, let me ask you this. How much okay, on a related note, there's a billion PCs, a billion computers in the world today. We just reached that number. So I'm going to ask you, how much do you pay for how much bandwidth for your internet service provider?
Oh, me?
Oh, go ahead, Mohammed.
I'm not sure. I don't pay the bills.
Oh, right, yeah. No. Oh, I forget you're 16. You don't know how much it costs in Qatar?
No, in Qatar, it's probably going to cost like half of my soul.
Okay, that's a pretty steep price. Jim, how much do you pay?
I pay...
Hey, you know, to download porn on the internet, half your soul is pretty good.
That's not bad at all. I pay... It's through a cable company, so it's through Comcast, and I think it's 3 down and 1 up megabits per second, which is horribly slow, and I'm paying $52 a month. And it's unlimited right now, but I think that's going to... There's a huge change happening in America. They're going to start trying to regulate how much is up and down, which
I
don't know how it's going to work. It sounds horrible.
Yeah, Leo Laporte was talking about it, obviously, on Twitter. But yeah. Okay, I'm going to wow you all. My ISP charges me €30. So that's probably about, you know, $50.
Yeah.
For 30 down and 8 up.
Nice. Nice. Yeah. Well, one of the Quest, the communication companies in the West, is going to start. They actually have right now is available 17 down and 5 up, and
hey,
they're saying in the next 2 or 3 months it'll be 30 down and 30 up because they've put in a bunch of fiber, and so I'm on a list that's going to notify me when it's available. So I'm keep crossing my fingers. I mean, 30 up, how many podcasts do I upload in a week? It would be so great.
Hey, that's not going to be unlimited though. I don't know. Yeah, but fiber optics, baby. That's the way of the future.
Yeah, actually. People in Qatar, the rich people that know about fiber optic, they get it and they have the faster connection.
Oh, shut up. You have everything. I hate you now.
That's all there is to it.
All right, kids. Thanks a lot. I think we're going to go to the end of the show. And before we sign off, I want to ask a question to Jim. You were saying that, you know, of course, your clip show reviews different video podcasts. And I would like to ask you, what shows would you recommend to someone who is just starting out in podcasts and would like to watch cool stuff apart from the clip show, obviously? What video shows would you recommend?
You know, it's funny that you asked that question because next Tuesday, a week from today, we're going to have our final show of the season, which is going to be a live show. And on the end of our seasons, we usually do like a top five or top 10 shows you should watch while we're on a break. So we'll be giving a list then. But I think that it's pretty simple, you know. The big show, like Rocket Boom, is a great show to watch. If you've seen it, you know it's a pretty premier podcast. He makes some pretty good money at it, and he has some great content from around the world. And it's sort of like a quick, you know, anywhere between 2 and 10 minute, you know, update of the news. It's really quite enjoyable, and it's definitely worth putting in your RSS feeder. There's one called Mob Logic that has that's just started a couple months ago, and it's Mob Logic TV, and it's really great too. It's hosted by a great gal named Lindsay Campbell, and it's a lot of fun to watch too. But you know, tune into the clip show next Tuesday, or pick it up on your RSS, and you'll see the top 10 or top 5.
Nicely done, sir. Very good. Mohammed, do you want to pin something, talk about a website you have, or do you have anything? No?
I'd actually, on the subject of podcasts, I'd like to, you know, rep my favorite podcast. It's called NoobTube. It's just a gaming website. Every week on Sunday, they come out with it, and it's just a great show to watch about reviews on games. And for once, it's a podcast that's not paid to say good stuff, you know.
Right, yeah. Yeah, it's totally independent. I actually watched a couple of episodes when you told me about it. It's called Noob, N-O-O-B-T-O-O-B, is it? Or T-U-B?
Yeah, T-O-O-B. T-O-O-B.
Right. Okay.
There is a lot of swearing, so, you know, just be careful.
That's a gaming podcast. There should be a lot of swearing. They're trying to make it like Xbox Live, right?
Oh, don't talk about that. Okay, people, we went a little bit over an hour, but I think it was well worth it. I want to thank again Jim Kirks and Mohammed for being here, and I want to thank our listeners for being here. If you want to review our podcast on iTunes, please feel free to do so. I can't talk. And if you want to contact us, you can do so at thefeliusclub.com or send an email at contact@thefeliusclub.com. And that's going to do it for another show. I thank everyone, and I will talk to you again next month. Thanks, Guy, and goodbye. Say bye, guys.
Okay, bye.
Thank you.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.